guest you've never met before, and suddenly an email pops up from somebody who says, your next guest, I've had meetings with her a couple of times through business. She really knows her stuff and is a very, very smart lady and nice with it. David. I've just asked Mary about David. She says, I don't recall him at all. And then I explained what company he's from, because he's actually included that in the email. And it does ring a bell, Mary,
yeah, absolutely,
doesn't it? But,
yes.
But I'd like to say this is not your agent or somebody emailing me saying
and I haven't paid him a penny.
No, it's all
to say that.
So anyway, that thank you, David. It's nice to know.
Thank you, David.
Mary Waring is a finance expert. She's the author of The Wealthy Woman, A Man Is Not a Financial Plan. And let me just give you a bit of background. At an early age, Mary was aware, like with many women, her mother was stuck in a marriage that she could not get out of because she was not financially savvy enough. Have I got that right, Mary?
That's right. Well, I guess it's not just not financially savvy. She didn't actually have any money in her own right. So the bank account was in my father's name. The house was in my father's name. And in the days pre-child support agency, she knew she couldn't support herself and three children if she left.
Do you know, it wasn't until we were talking, we were talking about mortgages on this show a couple of months ago, and a lady phoned up who's in her 80s and said, do you know, it was only in the late 60s a woman could even apply for a mortgage on her own. Did I mean, you obviously knew that.
Well, it's actually, and I can't remember the date, but it's not that long ago that wives did their own tax returns. It used to be that the husband did the tax return for the wife. So, of course, now, today, you'd think that's ridiculous that your husband would have to do it for you. You wouldn't be allowed to do it yourself.
But you know, we were just asking around in the office before the show started about how many parents, and most people in this office are much younger than me, but they're still, so a lot of their parents or their mothers are almost caught up in this relationship with the father because they are financially reliant
absolutely
on the man. And these must be people of my age, actually, or just a bit older.
Well, a lot of women are, because what happens is in the marriage, often the wife will look after the children. And that's a joint decision because it suits both of them. But of course, the wife has then been out of the workplace for a long time. If she's considering divorce, she's aware that she's not going to earn an awful lot of money herself. And also, how many jobs are available for someone who hasn't been in the workplace for 25 years? She's also not going to feel terribly confident about going out to get a job. So it's really worrying for women who don't have financial money coming in on their own.
I think when you... Is there a sense of irony in your title, The Wealthy Woman? Because just having met you and read the book, it's not about living a, you know, becoming rich.
No.
I think you mean wealthy in that you don't have worry. And they say
absolutely
that if you're free from worry, then you are liberated.
Absolutely. So wealthy to me means understanding your finance, feeling comfortable with it. It doesn't mean you're rolling in money, but it means when your bank statement, credit card statement comes in, you're happy to look at them, you understand them. Because to me, if you've got a pile of statements that you won't open because you're too worried as to what they're going to tell you, I think you can never be called wealthy, no matter how much money you're earning.
You're right. And I was watching BBC News this morning. We were doing a special on growing old and how retirement may soon well be a redundant to use the word that for a start, most people aren't going to be able to retire, but also that it's been proven medically you are healthier if you keep working. And I think in a situation, I mean, how many people of my generation will be able to afford to retire? Now, if you read your book, if someone reads, they will be able to. And I will talk about the layout of the book because selfishly, I'll just talk about me a bit more because there is a chapter for each decade. And the decade that I reached yesterday, you say, right, by now you've fallen into two camps. There are those of your friends who are happily spending a few days on the golf course and doing part-time work and having nice holidays. And then there's the rest of you who are going to have to just keep going. Yeah. Now, I fall into the latter. And that is really because I also qualify as another chapter that you've got, which is the ostrich, which is just put your head in the sand.
Yeah. Well, there's an issue that lots of people want to keep working for as long as they can, as long as they feel able. But there's a big difference between wanting to work and doing it through choice and having to work because you haven't got the money. So I realised from seeing the situation my mother was in that money gives you choices. And I'm not saying money makes you happy, but it gives you choices which potentially you wouldn't have otherwise. So that's why I say it's one thing to have a lot of money, or, well, enough money, and think, actually, I enjoy work. I want to go out to work. I want to mix with lots of people, and I'm going to do that. But compare that to the situation of someone who isn't enjoying work or who wants to cut their hours down and they can't afford to.
Mm.
So that's the difference. It's feeling in control and being able to plan your future and having the choices that suit you.
Mm. There are people, though, who just live for the day, don't they? They just think, and you hit on this as well, and I think these days are over because, you know, there is, when you say that people fall into two camps, with me personally, there are my friends who stand to inherit or have inherited, and I've spoken about this a lot, and it's probably sour grapes because I won't inherit a penny and I've never been given a penny by anybody, but there's their safety net. You know, they know mummy and daddy eventually, they're going to inherit the house or the savings, or maybe they've already been given that helping hand to get a deposit or for whatever, rent or mortgage or whatever. Those days may well soon end, mightn't they? Because if those parents in the future have been saving, they're not going to gain any interest, are they? And that also they may have second wives, you know, third wives, extended kids, a new generation of children, all those people living off them.
And there's also the whole issue as well of care fees. That it's one thing to say, well, my parents have got a house, they've got money, and that's going to come to me. But actually, if your parents get ill and go into a care home, care fees in, well, I don't even know about London, are going
just
to be £1,500 a week.
Yes.
That is soon going to eat up an awful lot of money. So you can't even rely on an inheritance, even if your parents do have funds. And also, once you leave over £325,000, the taxman takes 40%. So by the time you've paid inheritance tax, if your parents need to go into a care home, there won't necessarily be an awful lot of money left. And of course, your parents are using that money to live off.
Of course they are.
Now.
Yes.
And like you say, if it's in the bank, if it's not earning very much interest and inflation's going up and food and utilities and everything else, they may well be spending a lot of their savings.
Yes.
Just to keep going.
So anyone listening now, my age and downwards, because I do think I've missed the moment, to be honest, Mary. There's not a great deal I can do now except hope my health continues and that I can get employment. But who will your book help?
Well,
people who have just finished secondary education.
In an ideal world, it's the younger you start, the better. So my book is all about start taking small steps at an early age and do it over a long period of time, and then it really adds up. So for someone in their 20s, if they were to start saving now, firstly, it sets up a bit of a habit. So even if it's not a lot of money, you get into the habit of saving. As your salary goes up, you can start saving some more. And you'd be surprised over time how much that really adds up. So there's an example in the book of child allowance.
Mm-hmm.
So based on child allowance of £20.30 for your first child, that you get paid from the day your baby's born until they're 18, if they continue into further education. If you were to invest that in the stock market and be able to get a 10% return, well, then at the age of 18, that money's worth £53,000. So that's going to pay for university.
But how do you know it's worth £53,000?
If you get a 10% return.
Right,
and
okay.
You can't rely upon.
Because if you, I mean, with no interest, why are you going to say put any money
in? Well, I'm not talking about putting it into a savings account. I'm talking about it being in the stock market.
But then that's gambling, isn't it?
Well, it's not gambling because you can get a very safe portfolio. You can get a portfolio that's suitable for you.
Right.
And over the long term, you will get more money in the stock market than in savings. And the reason savings give you such a low rate is because there is absolutely no risk there
right.
at all. On the stock market, there is a risk. because it does go up and down. But statistics show that over the longer term, the stock market is going to outperform your money in the bank without a doubt.
Is that, I mean, listen, you know far more about this than me, but since I've been working for this radio station, things have somersaulted. Banks have, you know, been taken to trial. Yeah. You know, so when you say for you there is a there will be a safe investment, can you honestly say that? Never 100%.
No, you can never say 100%.
And these are strange times, Mary.
And it's also, if you're putting money into the stock market, you'd want to plan for it to be in the market for a minimum of about 5 years. Because if you've got money that you're going to want next year, you wouldn't put that into the stock market because of the risk that it might fall. But if you're saving over the longer term, if the stock market were to fall, that's not such an issue if you don't want your money
right
at that stage.
What if you're like me, who has no head for this, and this is something else that you talk about, and we'll talk at the end of this about how women have changed when it comes to finances, and that's a lot of what your book is about. But one of the old adages is that women aren't good at maths. It's always boys that are better at maths, which is why often the man in the family ends up doing the accounts and everything else. What if you are like me, who I just think I don't have the time, I don't have the inclination to chase pennies, save pounds, or if I do, I don't want to have to worry about it. If you put money in the stock market, are you having to watch it all the time and play it?
Well, if you had an advisor, your advisor is going to tell you. Your advisor is going to report to you on a regular basis as to how well your investment is doing. And actually, the whole issue about women not being good at maths, I do think that the way we're taught maths in school doesn't appeal to the typical female brain. Now, I obviously don't have a typical female brain because I love it.
Do you?
Yeah, but I've met so many women, and these are really, really smart women who've got a bit of a mental block about maths. So I think it's the way it's taught. It just doesn't appeal generally to women. But actually, the book is all about, if we strip jargon out of it and we explain it all in very easy terms, you will understand it.
Mm.
It's just nobody sat down and explained it to you in a way that suits.
You see,
now.
I'm going to say something now that's really going to frustrate you. I know two people. Like, one is so cautious about his finances. He has pension plans, you know, a graph on his, probably on his kitchen wall, what he's earned, what his outgoings are. Everything is budgeted. I have another friend who literally spends what she earns. Now, she's in her 40s, and she's healthy, and she has a fantastic life. She lives for the moment and is spontaneous and organic. And I envy her life more than I envy him his.
Yeah, but it's a trade-off, isn't it? And I don't think either of those people are necessarily the example you'd want to stick with. What you need to do is plan for the future. Because if you spend everything now, it is going to come back and bite you on the bum in the at some point. What you need to do is be saving now, but actually still be spending. Because who wants to go to work and not go out and enjoy the money they've worked hard for? So it's that trade-off and it's the balance. It's getting it right.
Mm.
And I think in the two examples you gave were both extremes. Somebody who just saves and doesn't spend anything, and someone who spends but isn't saving for the future at all, you need to find that middle ground so that you can enjoy your money now and spend it, but make sure you are putting something away for later.
And do you know also, Mary, and thank heavens I haven't named this person, because I know in the back of her mind she thinks, and forgive me, all of you women out there, that a man is going to rescue her from this.
Oh, lots of women do.
Yes.
Lots of women do. Lots of women I speak to who
are... And a lot of women are rescued
by... Absolutely. And a lot of women I speak to who are going through divorce, they are also hoping that another man is going to come along to save them.
Mm. Mm. Nothing changes, does it really?
Nothing changes. And you'd think as well that the idea that your man looked after you was a very old-fashioned idea now, and it's no longer applicable.
Well, housekeeping. I mean, housekeeping was it was an expression of what you were given by the man, really, you know?
Yeah.
A woman would never have given the bloke a housekeeping budget. That was what was... And, you know, I remember my mum saying, oh, the housekeeping's in the kitchen cupboard on the left. strange yeah. that, you know, my father would put it. How far have we come then? I mean, do you, are you, this book is needed, so we haven't come that far, no. have we?
Yeah. Well, I'm not sure how far we've come. And I think it does come back to the maths just not appealing to women. And like anything, if you don't understand it, if you're a little bit nervous about it, that's why you put your head in the sand. Because we all do it. If it's something you don't feel comfortable with, you don't get on and do it.
This is one on the back cover of your book. It says it's as easy to be wealthy as it is to be poor.
Yeah.
There's very little difference in the way that you become either.
And it is, because it's all about small steps. So being poor would be spending all your money now. You end up with whatever money you've got left at the end of the month and you think, great, I'm going to spend it. Being wealthy is having that money left at the end of the month and saving it. Actually, the more sensible way would be to save at the beginning of the month, because the chances of having money left at the end are quite small.
Right. Let me very quick. We're getting loads of reaction. First of all, we had a text from Ava who says she thinks Mary is speaking very dangerous terms when it comes to investing in the stock market.
Well, I'm a financial advisor, so I am going to feel comfortable about investing in the stock market.
And would you say then you've got to find a financial advisor? You can't just start reading the back pages of papers thinking I'm going to invest in this.
A financial advisor is going to have access to research that you don't have access to. They're going to have access to software. They're going to understand an awful lot more than you're ever going to know by just picking up.
And do you pay a financial advisor, or are they being paid? You pay them.
You pay.
The companies aren't paying them. Who's getting the investment?
No. All the rules have changed. Financial advisors used to get commission. That commission was, in fact, coming from your pot of money. You just didn't realise it.
I see.
Exactly.
This is from Paul. He says, good afternoon, Joe. What a fantastic show. Thank you, Paul. My wife and I share the burdens of running the household equally. However, when it comes to managing our finances, that is something that falls to me. Not because I want to do it, but because my wife is happy for me to do it. She has a condition which can sometimes make it very difficult for her to understand complex issues. Gosh, that's so like me. I look after our savings and I pay all the bills, etc. However, I always keep my wife informed and I discuss large outgoings with her. Personally, money-wise, I used to spend money, he says, as fast as I earned it. But as I've got older, I've become more sensible with money. Although I must say, I've never relied on or lived on credit. As my dad used to say, if you ain't got it, don't spend it. We've also got the guy who said, you know your stuff. And you went, I think I remember him. He says, Joe, tell her it was 5 years ago.
I know. That's obviously bad memory on my part, isn't it?
No, but he's singing your praises.
Oh, thank you, David.
We also have Robert who says, before my wife returned to me, I coped very well on my benefits. Her return marked the end of my benefits and her job is virtually our sole source of income. My wife is, however, very bad with money management and got herself into considerable difficulty some time ago, which is still being paid off. But I'm quite good at coping with all the bills. You see, this is the trouble is, you just need, and I also have friends who are actors who found themselves in massive debt and literally 15 years later, they're still paying. Yeah. That's the trouble. The 80s child.
Absolutely. And there's a whole chapter in the book as well about credit card and how expensive credit card is, because what happens is a lot of people have a credit card bill and it says your monthly payment is £100, your minimum monthly payment is £100,
and you just keep paying that
and you think, well, £100, I can afford £100, that's fine, I can still spend a bit more because I can afford to pay back a little bit more. What then you're not looking at is how long it's going to take you to pay back. And there's an example in the book of a credit card balance of £5,000, interest rate of 17%, and a lot of cards will have more than that. Mm. If you only ever pay the minimum balance, it will take you 47 years to pay it off. And you'll pay back over £15,000 when you take the interest into account.
And how many of us only ever pay the minimum amount?
And that's what happens. People think, well, they only want me to pay, £100, whatever it is. And I feel comfortable with paying £100, so therefore my credit card bill can't be too bad.
But there will be an own-up time. We've run out of time. I've really enjoyed speaking to you.
Thank you. I've enjoyed it so much.
Mary Waring is the author and the finance expert, and the book is called The Wealthy Woman, A Man Is Not a Financial Plan. And as Mary said, wealthy means liberated, really.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you, Jo.
We'll take calls on this after the news, 4:30.